It is April 7th, 2020. Parshana Maharaj will speak on COVID-19.
There are so many different perspectives from which we can look at this. We should also include the sadhu's perspective, which considers outside threats to be an opportunity for the Vaishnava community to be more united. For those who don't know, what's the difference between a horse and a donkey? Do you know? Horses are cultured. Donkeys are not. When there's an outside threat, donkeys form a circle and they face the outside threat and they kick each other in the rear. That's why they're called asses.
They kick each other?
Yes. Okay. Horses, when there's an outside threat, they form a circle and turn to each other. And then they kick at the threatening element. So the Vaishnava's perspective is when there's an outside threat, it's an opportunity for the devotee community to become more united, more integrated, and an opportunity for us to forget or overlook the little details that cause fragmentation within the community. And we unite to face this outside threat. And really, the ones who are destroyed by crisis are the ones who never expected it.
Would you repeat that?
The people who are destroyed by crisis are the ones who never expected it.
Who did not expect the crisis?
Expect it. Now, Srimad Bhagavatam tells us that the Kali Yuga is just going to be increasing exceptional suffering, trauma, threat, crisis. And without getting into catastrophizing, which is not helpful, but we can accept the Corona Shura as a wake-up call. Without denying or minimizing the gravity of the situation, and at all points sympathizing with those who are suffering due to this threat, it's so important to keep all aspects in proper perspective. We're threatened now with loss on a grand scale level, loss of our freedom, loss of life, loss of loved ones, loss of our sense of security, health, stability. And, you know, the human anatomy goes through different stages in the process of facing threat and loss. There's anger, denial, sadness, natural sequence as we go through. Hopefully, ultimately, arriving at the sense of acceptance. Because we've all experienced the ability to survive loss and to heal and to grow in the aftermath. If we look at the most difficult experiences we've ever endured, which we might not remember, because the trauma of birth, in which we empathize with the pain the mother endures, but the baby can't tell us how much pain he endured in the process of birth. And in the trauma of that experience, we don't remember it. But we've all been through it. How do we endure? How do we get through our various crises? If we remember back on what's carried us through crisis before, we'll find that we still have the internal resources, the friends and family we reached out to and who reached out to us, our spiritual practices. Now, in today's world, so conditioned to a state of affluenza, meaning an addiction to quick results, pleasures, convenience, we're so prone to see an inconvenience as a crisis. If we're quarantined in a house and the kids are driving us crazy, that's not a crisis. That's an inconvenience. When your child develops a fever or your mother's on a respirator, that's a problem. Anyway, it's important to keep things in perspective. And without getting into catastrophizing, not that we shouldn't look at the worst case scenario, we shouldn't dwell on it. Because it's helpful to focus on the here and now. What can I do at this time that's both meaningful and productive? And focus on whatever steps we can take, considering whether they are important and compassionate and loving. And cultivating the ability to find meaning and purpose in inescapable pain. Pain is mandatory for life. Misery is optional. And every mission that's meaningful and purposeful and valuable requires sacrifice. And if we can find significance in our suffering, which will make it meaningful to ourselves and others, that helps us greatly to endure. What do we fear most in life? We fear loss. But what has our life been in a series of losses? When you're born, you leave, you lose the safety and security of the womb, however painful it may be. When a child goes to school, he loses the freedom he previously enjoyed. When you marry, or when you're ordained, you lose the option of many choices. When you take on a job, you lose your independence. When you grow old, you lose your good looks and abilities. And when you die, you lose it all. And this is just part of normal life. But whose life is ordinary? Every life is special and significant. The real question is, what do we do with our losses? Do we hide them? Do we deny them? Do we pretend to ourselves and others that they don't exist or that we're not affected? Do we rationalize that our losses are small compared to our gains? Or do we blame others for our losses? And, you know, most of us do varieties of these things most of the time. And in so, we miss a great opportunity. Blessed are those who mourn, for they shall be comforted. Which means to allow our losses to sever our false sense of security and lead us to the painful truth that we live in a broken world.
Would you repeat the last point, Maharaj, of the loss?
The beatitude, blessed are those who mourn, for therefore they shall be comforted.
No, the loss, we are afraid of losing our security. What was that? Can you repeat what you just said?
I don't remember what I just said.
Okay, so continue.
In the midst of our pain and fear, there is that surprising gentle voice assuring us, blessed are those who mourn, for they shall be comforted. It doesn't say, blessed are those who comfort, because they will be comforted. Almost paradoxically, blessed are those who mourn, for they shall be comforted. Mourning means we acknowledge the extent and depth of our loss and pain and allow that to bring us to the painful truth of our brokenness, that we live in a broken world. The material world is a place of pain. It's designed to be as such. And if we can truly feel, which is what mourning means, you acknowledge, you feel, you experience the depth of your pain and loss, and allow your grieving heart to open your inner eye to a vast world where there is suffering beyond our imagination.
Okay, please repeat the last sentence.
The process of mourning sobers us to the acknowledgement of the depth of our feelings of pain and loss. And when we become that real with ourselves, it opens your inner eye to a vast world of suffering beyond your imagination and experience. And it allows you to connect with the pain and suffering as well as the aspirations
of others.
Of others. And the truth is, there is an inconceivable, priceless blessing awaiting in our brokenness. Once again, that gentle voice, "My grace is sufficient for you." And mourning is the first step in this very crucial journey from resentment to gratitude. To allow our mourning to soften our hearts to the possibility of saying thank you.
May I interrupt my heart, or you would like me to ask afterwards?
Just let us finish this one theme.
Okay.
Thank you for the gift of life, which holds the treasure of Krishna consciousness within it. And to acknowledge that our brokenness is not some fatal condition to which we have become poor victims. Our suffering is the bitter fruit of our God-given free will to say no to the love of God and turn our backs on His grace. So are we grateful for the coronavirus? There's a world of difference between being grateful for everything, which we're not called to do, and being grateful in everything, which we are called to. Grateful for the gift of life and the treasure of Krishna consciousness, and whatever comes to sober us to that blessing. It's also an opportunity to realize the tremendous potential within the human body, which is like the Bhagavatam uses, the analogies of a city. The human body is like a city. And it has within it a temple within which resides Paramatma and Jiva forever. And that temple is protected by a wonderful creation called the immune system. And it has its kshatriyas. Let's consider the body to be like a castle, which is designed to withstand threats from outside if we're unified within. And the body has, I don't know if it's white blood cells or red blood cells or whatever, is like the kshatriyas who evict invaders who have no right to enter into our sacred space. And we have tremendous control over our immune system, because basically it serves us by either extending and protecting life or relinquishing it, dependent on whether our interpretation that life is worth living. And that premise that life is worth living is based on considerations. Is there purpose and meaning to life? And are there loving relationships that will sustain me through life? If the answer is yes, and we're full of gratitude, then the immune system demonstrates its remarkable ability to keep threats outside of ourselves and to evict them when they try to enter our body. We have the ability to control our emotions and it's based on our interpretation of life. Does it have meaning and purpose for which my natural response is gratitude? Are there loving relationships that make life not only meaningful and purposeful, but joyful? If the answer is yes, according to my interpretation, then the immune system will facilitate us sustaining life until our purpose here is done. At which time we receive renewed life. So, crisis can be very helpful in uniting communities or countries or a world, taking our focus away from the trivial sources of conflict and splintering which divides us. An outside crisis holds the opportunity to unite us because we're all in this together. The coronavirus is a worldwide challenge. It's something we all face, preferably together. And if we acknowledge and unite our various individual and collective resources, we can emerge from the other end of this crisis stronger and more united. Furthermore, it may seem paradoxical because in most of the crises we face in life, we find the beauty of people coming together. Now you can say that, but that's the worst thing about coronavirus, is the social distancing. But there's other ways to come together and to come closer to one another than simply physical proximity. The coronavirus is also a tremendous opportunity to become less selfish. So why do you wear a face mask? To protect yourself or to protect others? And to be thoughtful and considerate of those who are at the highest risk, the elderly, those who have underlying health challenges or a compromised immune system. It's an opportunity to emerge from our selfish little isolation and to be more considerate of the gift of life that others are trying to hold on to until they've finished their purpose in life and they move on. Furthermore, here in New Vrindavan, where Srila Prabhupada gave us the vision of living off the land, sustained by nature's gifts and bounty, Why? For some sattvic experience? No. To appreciate the wonder of Krishna, that he's made natural arrangements for a healthy and meaningful life in Krishna consciousness, at the end of which we go back to him. So that we've forfeited our natural resources to become dependent on China. Now we're experiencing the bitter fruit of that choice. And we can use that as an inspiration to get back to our purpose in being here, to experience and demonstrate the perfection of living in harmony with nature's arrangements, which are the expression of Krishna's plan for us, to live a life of gratitude and mission and purpose, all of which require sacrifice. And shared sacrifice is a tremendous contributor to bringing souls together in a spirit of devotion called the Brijabasi spirit. Anything else?
Thank you, Maharaj. That was simply amazing. You mentioned in the beginning about the different stages when it comes to crisis. I believe that's what you were saying. And the last one was the acceptance. How would that look like when somebody arrives in our current situation?
When somebody arrives?
At that stage of accepting the situation. You know, initially I think you were mentioning about the, you know, fear or anger.
Denial.
And the last stage being?
Acceptance. So and that's also related to the truth that in material life, pain is unavoidable. Misery is optional. Mm-hmm. And what transforms pain into misery? Our lack of acceptance. It creates more pain than what's inherent to the situation by our own minds. And just as we have a ingenious system called the immune system, you're related to that system. Are other systems which create what? Endorphins, VIPs, hormones that serve as like natural opiates. People become addicted to opiates because they haven't developed their own systems which naturally minimize pain to just what's necessary for your own well-being. And those systems, just like the immune system, they are fueled by thoughts of kindness, gratitude, compassion, and love. So we have some control over these experiences, which we don't necessarily acknowledge or exercise. But life in the 21st century is a time to consider your own immune system, because there will be other creations after coronavirus that we'll be subjected to.
That's why you're emphasizing the immune system.
Yes. That's our natural defense.
So, is there a relationship between the stage of acceptance and immune system, Maharaj?
Yes.
I missed
that. The immune system is fortified by certain emotions, top of which is love, which includes compassion, which creates gratitude.
Versus the other ones which you mentioned, the denial, the fear, the anger.
There's an option to being dragged through life kicking and screaming all the way. And that option is acceptance, which minimizes the struggle and the anguish and helps us to be grateful in all things, that we don't need to be grateful for all things. Furthermore, take regular stock, come and see and count your blessings. But how precious it is. Take stock of your resources. We have family, community, friends to reach out to. And there's great support.
And that's what will help us to be feel more grateful.
Yes. Now, this social distancing is a challenge because man is designed as a social being. But you see, devotees and others becoming very creative in their social interactions, which doesn't jeopardize themselves or others with becoming infected. Because that creativity is another gift of Krishna, which is given us to adapt to the different challenges that life presents. Problem is, we get so stuck in our own conditioning and selfishness and how we want things to be that we blind ourselves to endless opportunities for creative expression of loving relationships and social dynamics. There's endless opportunities to continue and enrich our social life without jeopardizing one another with infection. And personally, I've never experienced such a sense of gratitude for technology, which does not come naturally to me. But at this point, when there is social distancing, we can still come closer to one another and closer to Krishna by various creative means of loving exchange.
Using the modern technology.
Yes. Personally, I've never been so helped in my attitude, which is not a good one, towards technology by the current threat.
I've never heard you say like that again, broken world. We live in a broken world, Maharaj. And
that is an unavoidable reality that is so much helped if we just accept it.
Broken. So how would you call spiritual world? Complete and whole, or
yes,
would be
complete and perfect.
Complete and perfect.
But it is not utopia. Things go wrong there too. Krishna tries to milk a bull.
Right.
And when the gopis hear the song of his flute, They dress in the most ludicrous way.
Because it's complete and perfect.
But that's a higher perfection.
Yeah, and it's a it's in a different.
It's all based on Krishna's pleasure, and more so the pleasure of his devotees. Now, if you look at Braj Lila, after that terrible, terrible calamity of seeing Krishna engulfed in the coils of Kaliya, and you know, the devotees had to restrain Mother Yashoda from just running into Jamuna to save Krishna. And the devotees are fainting and practically dying seeing Krishna wrapped in the coils of that hideous monster. But then he turned it into such a festival when he emerged himself and began dancing on Kaliya's hoods. Now, this pastime is the most vivid in demonstrating how to become free of false ego, which we don't like to acknowledge lives in the depths of our being. And that false ego is so ugly, we don't like to admit it. We don't like to confront it. And we keep it in denial. And we make our offerings to the Kaliya within us so that it won't raise its ugly head for ourselves and others to see, until the false ego, like Kaliya, hears the melodious musical sounds of Krishna splashing in the waves of Jamuna, which means the flow of love in our own hearts. And when that hideous monster raises his ugly hoods, and we're forced to the humility of acknowledging, yes, that is within me, our only means of subduing that demon is to keep Krishna dancing on the hoods of Kaliya by chanting Hare Krishna. Because there is one part of the human body which is very much like a serpent, always eager for any opportunity to spout its venom, mainly in criticizing others. False ego. And it's too formidable for us to overcome by our own ability, by keeping Krishna dancing on that serpent-like tongue in the form of his holy name. It gradually extracts all the poison and venom. And then, at the end, with the Nagapatnis, who first wanted Kaliya to die, they were just so disgusted with him. But when they saw, and they told Krishna in their prayers, that look, he's becoming repentant and humble, and he's turning to you for your grace. And then Krishna delivered him. And the Nagapatnis went to the treasury to follow Srila Rupa Goswami's standard of offering our most precious gift to Krishna. What is most precious to us in our conditioned state? It's our false ego. So when they went to offer their most precious jewels, they found something in the treasure chest they never knew was there. What was it? Kastubha Mani, which they offered to Krishna. How do we get off on that tangent? Where were we?
I was asking about the broken world.
Oh. The material world is broken. It has its own inherent perfection because it's designed to rectify our selfish mentality and lack of devotion. And give us the opportunity, if you want to play God, you have every opportunity in this world. You can control however you desire. But then when you realize that the results is nothing but suffering, the results of your controlling exploits is simply suffering, until the point you acknowledge that Krishna is the perfect controller. He doesn't want to control. He wants to serve his devotees. Oh, I remember. So after the Kaliya pastime, which became such a festive occasion, the devotees didn't even want to go home. They camped out on the bank of the Jamuna at that very place. They couldn't leave. It was so precious to them. Then what happened in the middle of the night? They awoke to find to the burning heat of a conflagration that had them surrounded. They were surrounded by this blazing forest fire, which means the outcome of the friction caused by little jivas who are like sparks competing for control and dominance. Communal discord, meaning conflict within the community, because of the individual jiva's struggles to dominate and control. And when that's fanned by the winds of temptation, it bursts into this fiery conflagration which consumes everything. So when the devotees, when the Brijabasis found themselves surrounded by this forest fire, flames reaching to the sky, what did they do? There's no fire department in Braj.
They called out to Krishna.
They called out to Krishna, please save us. But what does that mean in Brijabasi language, Krishna save us? It doesn't mean protect my body, because body belongs to Krishna to use according to his pleasure. So when they call out to Krishna, please save us, it means, Krishna, this is a calamity, because if we're consumed in this inferno, who is going to cook for you? And who's going to play with you? And who's going to sing for you? Krishna, we can't let you be the only survivor. So, save us so that we can serve you. That's the meaning in the prayer of the Brijabasis, which is also meant as an example for us to follow. So you can become impersonal and say, you know, when my time comes, I'll die, so why should I protect myself from the coronavirus? That's an impersonal perspective, because Krishna will take us when he's ready, or when we're ready, which ideally would be the same. Meanwhile, this body is a gift from Krishna, containing within it the treasure of a potential eternal relationship with Krishna in Braj. That should be protected. More so, we should protect the other devotees to whatever extent we can, so that they can finish their offering in this life. Not because we're attached to the body. We're protective of the treasure within the body, of a potential eternal service to Krishna in Goloka Vrindavan. And when we've learned our lessons and the body is worn out, then we embrace the gift of transmigration of the soul to whatever new form is appropriate for our consciousness at that time. So death is not to be feared. Dying without purpose or meaning is something we should protect ourselves and others from.
Thank you so much, Maharaj.